on a topic for tonight, which was, you want to say what the, want to say what the session was?
Again? Yeah, the suggestion was, what's the hashkafa on having, I guess in a classroom, but mainly in camp, we could apply a classroom about like having like MVPs, like the summer.
Right.
Who did the best, and I guess it's in terms of sports, maybe in terms of other things.
Right, it's a great, great question. So, yeah, I always like to, you know, base.
That include like best in learning, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's classic in a school setting, best learner, you know, doesn't, but it's Kodesh Ochol.
Valedictorian.
And valedictorian, all these things come up all the time. It's a fantastic question. So I want to start off with a shmooze I recall here. I can't believe I found it. Rabbi Lubin gave the shmooze. It was at a Goldenberg bar mitzvah, I think. And he said over the shmooze, I don't know how he applied it to the Goldenbergs, but the shmooze was that in Bamidbar, I forgot the chazal. I mean, the Rabbag says it. It says that a monarch should be very careful, be organized, that he wants to invite the people to come before him. So the way they did it, somewhere in Pashas Bamidbar, they would do something with flags so that everybody would see the flag and they'd all come.
Oh, that was Alexandria's shul?
What?
In the shul or just...
Look at Parshas Bamidbar. They would blow a shofar. They would blow a shofar so that everybody would hear it, the people that would need to come, and would come together in the Nesiyim. And the reason why they did it that way, rather than the shluchim of Beis Din, of Moshe Rabbeinu, just go around and tell the Nesiyim that need to come, just go around from door to door and tell them to come on your way to the Sanhedrin, just tell them to come. And the Rabbag says that the reason why they didn't do that is because that will create kinna, because you're going to have to go to one person and tell them before you tell the other person. It'll create kinna. Frank Rabbi Lubin, how will it cause kinna? I live on 176 and 7th Avenue. I got to walk to Yeshiva. So on the way, I'm going to tell this person is closest, and the next, on my way, as I get closer and closer, I'll tell every person I get to Yeshiva. I'll tell everyone. Let's say I live to Torah Samus. I'm coming to Torah Sinai. So on the way, you know, you just make a route and finish. That's how you tell everyone. That could have been done. It would have been on the way. Why would it be a problem telling one person for the other? No. Still, a person's going to feel insecure that somebody was told before me. So it's like that you have to always worry that the kinna that's going to be caused. I think he actually uses that word, that if you should do everything ba'achdus, kadesh lo tipol kinna b'neihem, should try and avoid the kinna. So I think that's a very good, not bad, basis for your shaila. We want to try to avoid kinna. So let's talk about this for a second. So the elementary school used to have star students. I don't know if anyone here was in Torah Semes Elementary School. They had star student. Every class, every week, had a star student. And, some kids are trying to get a star student, and they didn't get a star student. They called to complain. The teacher hates me and refuses to give me a star student. And I know one teacher told me that they would tell their class at the beginning of the year, all of you are stars, star students. How am I supposed to pick one star student every week? You're all star students. And if someone doesn't do something so perfectly, but you're trying to be a star student, how can I pick one? So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do alphabetical order. We're going to start at the beginning of the first week, and then when we finish to the end, we'll start again in reverse order. So, and the week that you're a star student, you get to do everything first. You go to the water fountain first, and we hand out papers first, and you get your bags first, and you go first. And just remember, Monday morning, they would tell the student, don't remember, you're a star student this week, and the student's performance went up that week. Star student, chashuv, be star student. And there's no jealousy, no anything. They knew that was the routine, but So did it serve a purpose to the school? I don't think that's really served any purpose, but the teachers were very wise in that they utilized that, you know, that vehicle to enhance the, shtick in the classroom. You know, can you do it without making them star students? I mean, I don't know, probably you could do that. But I had a kid, an eighth grader, I'm not an eighth grader, a 12th grader, who told me, the yeshiva, we did away with valedictorian, which is sort of fits into your thing. Those graduates of our school who are sitting in this room who feel that they should have been valedictorian, you're probably right, you should have been valedictorian, but we made the decision many, many years ago based on the following story. We had two boys who had more or less the same exact average. They were like 4.48, and one was 4.76, and one was 1.75, and we decided that, well, if you rounded off to 4.8, they're the same thing, so should 4.76, and let's say it was 4.76 each, you're going to make it 4.767, 4.7, you're going to really go to the thousandth of a point to figure out which one will be valedictorian. And but one of the boys, it didn't end up a fight, because one boy said he didn't want to be valedictorian. He didn't want to be valedictorian. He won't accept it. He won't speak. He won't just give it to the other person. He doesn't want to be valedictorian, and he was very adamant. So I asked him why. He says because he'd rather have friends than be valedictorian. I said, what makes you think you're not gonna have friends? So this guy told me that he was 6 foot. In eighth grade, and he was like the best kid. He was also very athletic, and all of his friends, you know, they viewed him as like a shtickle bully. I don't know. He didn't have friends. So when he got to ninth grade, he took upon himself, he's never gonna hit a shot. He's never gonna hit a basketball. He's never gonna shoot and get it in. He's always gonna miss. So he could have friends. So he'd rather have friends than win the game. So you have to be pretty good to miss every shot. I know some pretty bad players who can get a shot in once in a while. But you have to be pretty good to miss every shot. He missed every single shot. So he says, that's what I did for 4 years. I'm not going to ruin it by becoming valedictorian. That's pretty, and I felt that was so, you know, after I heard this story, and he gave up the valedictorian. After that year, the early 2000s, we got rid of valedictorian. It was like, it's causing more harm than good. Then a chaver of mine, who was, you know, reshiv of a different branch, called me up and said, what do you do about valedictorian? Everyone has the same shaila. So I told him, we got rid of it. So I said, wow, it's so amazing, so beautiful. Achdus, Nokina, beautiful valedictorian. Okay, fine. So I saw him like a couple of years later, and I said, we're talking about graduation. I said, you don't do valedictorian? He goes, no, we do valedictorian. Oh, I remember you asked me a couple of years ago if we did valedictorian, and you thought it was a great idea. How come you still continue to do valedictorian? So he told me like this. I know I'm going to slug myself up, but I'm going to say it anyway. He said he spoke to the reshiva. That's all. And after he spoke to me, he heard Shaila, he wouldn't get rid of it, but he just figured he would run it by the reshiva. And the reshiva said he agrees 100% with Miami, that it's not good. And he says, but, you know, COVID is not good for people, but since if they're expecting it, you have no right to take it away from them. If it's coming to them, you can't take it away just because the cover's going to be bad for them. You know, cover's bad for a lot of people, but you have no right to take it away from someone. That's his nisayon. You have no right to take that away. So, therefore, he continued to do it. So, but then we had the shadow, what does Rashi mean by us? But since we had taken it away, it was already a few years that we had taken it away, so then we weren't taken away from them already. We took it away, we didn't know to have the shadow. But, so we took it away, and we still don't have valedictorian. We still give out some awards by graduation. I'm not even sure why. I think the only reason is because they're named after some people that died, and they're usually the family comes and they ask us every year who's getting the award, so we have to tell them. But otherwise, I don't think anybody remembers what award they got at graduation. And also, we stopped giving out these frivolous awards. We were giving awards to everyone, and then everyone gets an award at graduation. And then one person got an award for being such a something smiler or something like that. And it didn't go over too well. And they said, okay, we're only giving out these amount of awards. They were like, we're not making up new awards. These are the awards we give out. You earn them, fine. And but I still, every year we do it. I said that because it's so silly. There's not one award ever discussed the whole year. And then when they come to, the boys come to graduation, all of a sudden, like, graduating with honors. What is that? Graduating with honors.
No one's really expecting it.
Yeah, no one's expecting it. We have that guy.
It's not like it's talked
about. Yeah, we do. Like, yeah, it's not a big, it's not a thing in the school. It's more for the parents and grandparents, like if someone worked great.
They're expecting him. What was the reshiva saying?
The reshiva?
It's not practical.
Oh, the reshiva was saying, the reshiva was saying that valedictorian is a thing.
It's a known thing.
It's a known thing in the Welt, valedictorian. You were the valedictorian. So if a guy is valedictorian means you have the highest grades in the class, in the graduating class. So, but then I know many yeshivas, they don't want to give it to him because that's not the proper representative of the class. I know the big fights. Oh my gosh, I know schools that had big fights over this. We didn't want him, because valedictorian usually means you also speak. So they didn't want him to speak because he wears a yarmulke that has a blue line in it. And they didn't want him to be representing the school, so they made someone else a valedictorian. So we can do anything we want. So it's not a, it was close to a lot of big fights. So Bakshan, we stayed away from it.
Would all yeshiva do that?
What?
Tell someone that they should be able to speak if they have a weird yarmulke.
Tell someone that they should not speak.
In the yeshiva meeting.
We would similar. We would only take the person with the blue line to speak.
No.
So, but if it was only black, maybe we wouldn't, But, okay, but there are a lot of problems come from it. I think the question that came up about giving these awards, the question is it, can you accomplish the same thing without the award? We used to have a thing the boys who came through Torah's Chaim could appreciate this even more. But in my early years, most menalim just do whatever they were when they were in school. It's not a great, you went to school for education. What was the school you went to? Yeah, your high school, whatever your principal did. If it was, good or bad, that's what you do. So we had many years. When I came here to Miami, Rabbi Grumblatt was the principal of the high school. I was hired to be the assistant principal with the hope to one day take over to be principal. And Rabbi Grumblatt, at the end of davening, would call, if you didn't have your hat and jacket, you were talking or you were doing something inappropriate, he would keep track, and after a couple of days, it would end up, he would call you up after davening. I would like to see the following boys, and he would, call out the names, and they would come up from our standard, and he would give this person a 100-word assignment, this one a 200-word assignment, and I was teaching eighth grade, the first year I was there. And there was one boy who used to, in his spare time, he would write assignments for guys, and they would buy it off him. Because it had to be handwritten, because you can't, because they know there's always you're able to do. Computers weren't so posh, but you already were starting, so it had to be handwritten. He would write them, and he would sell them for guys. And so I saw that it was so ridiculous, And so after a couple of years, we came up with a different mahalach, that instead of having assignments, we came up with a system with, it was sort of like that, you just tally points, everyone gets a code, you post, every day you post the update on which how many points each one has, and it's self-monitoring, you see the thing, and if you hit, we made a rule that if you hit 20 points, you get suspended, but you could made it very easy to get off points. If you had 6 days in a row without points, it reduces 10. And if you serve a Sunday detention, it reduces 10. If you daven for the Amud, It reduces something. It was really crazy. And it caused mamash almost a revolution. It was almost a mutiny. Right, not right away. It probably lasted for about 4 years, the system, 3 or 4 years. After 4 years, there was such stress and anxiety amongst the student body that it was terrible. It was terrible, you know, and we had Rabbi Feuerman came. I think when he first came, he was the one who pointed out to us that, no, you don't need that. And I realized one day there were 10 kids serving in detention. You're looking at me, you can't even remember. You can't even remember this happened because the school totally changed. So there were 10 or 12 kids who were serving in detention on Sunday afternoon. The parents came, had to come to pick them up. The rule was you had to be in the room for the hour. And we hired a base manager guy to sit in the room and just take attendance that they stayed. And the parent came to pick up his kid. He came like 5-10 minutes early. And he comes into my office, the parent, and says, Rabbi, I said, what? Come with him. And he says, come with me. And he walks. It was the old building on 71st Street. He goes, I want you to see something. He walked down the hallway. Is that the classroom that they're doing the serving? My son serving the detention? He said, yeah. He says, look inside that room. So I look inside the room. The boys were climbing the walls. It was like 6 minutes left. They were climbing, yelling, screaming. Base manager guy is there with his, you know, his earbuds, doing his, you know, his work. He couldn't care less. He was just getting paid. He was getting paid his $20, and he didn't care what the kids did. And the kids were literally climbing the walls. And the father looks at me and says, "You mean to tell me that my kid is being rehabilitated in there?" It's a pretty good question. I can't see what was the value of that detention. It's like so ridiculous in retrospect; it made no sense. So we got rid of that. You know, and our Rabbi Foreman told us, "Don't get rid of it. If you have it, save it. Sometimes you'll use it." Like, I didn't want to apostle us totally, but it caused a lot of, you know, a lot of poor behavior in the school. Poor behavior in the high school, yeah, it caused the behaviors that were causing was a lot of chutzpah, disrespect, vandalism, cheating. Cheating on tests, on exams. Because when kids feel they're being unfairly treated, so they feel like, okay, so you are unfair to me, so I don't have to be fair to you. It happens to be that the kids cheat more by secular studies than Kodesh. So we did a whole survey on this years ago. So we thought it's because, wow, Kodesh, they're, you know, chashev, they're not gonna cheat on tests. That's not true. That's not the reason. The reason is and I don't think it's only because the Rebbeim are probably better proctors than the which I think the Rebbeim are better proctors because they themselves cheated when they were. I don't think that's the reason, though. But I think the Rebbeim are just treat the kids. They're fairer. They treat the kids more fairly, and the teachers who are fair with the students have less cheating incidents. And we know which teachers are, you know, have more cheating, and you could look and see. So when kids feel like they're being mistreated, see, a child, and in this case, we'll call anyone 0 to 18 a child, nothing personal. Anyone really, but they don't really know. Adults know how to express themselves, or are supposed to know how to express themselves. If you have a problem, go over and talk to someone. But a youngster, you know, even a teenager, he hasn't learned yet how to really express themselves. So they express themselves in their actions. So when you see, when you go, you come to a school and you see a lot of broken doorknobs, you know, and small vandalism, you know, torn books and broken desks and like are you? You know, you see a lot of that stuff. You walk into a school, you can figure it out. You walk into a school. I can walk into a school in 10 minutes. I could tell you what the rules are, what the enforcement is. Are they using punitive measures, group punishments? So you just tell by how the kids are behaving, how they're reacting, how they're talking. you hear, you know, a lot of talk amongst the faculty about disrespect and the kids are whatever, and you know, that usually comes from when the kids don't feel like they're treated properly. So all these things, you know, really play into it. And the question is, what is the value in, is it really necessary? You have so you want to tell the kid who was learning the best, right, that was really the question, the kid who's learning the best, that you're the most valuable kid this week. So how is he going to take that? But more, how are the other kids going to take it? It's like it become a whole big war with the kids who don't, you know, get it. Was it worth the whole geschäft? The whole thing is almost not worth it once you get into a fight with a kid.
No, but at least they stop talking.
Huh?
At least they stop talking during davening.
At least they stop talking during davening.
As you don't have chaos coming out of davening.
When we get rid of all of our points and detentions, and someone challenged me, like the kid's talking, you don't have a point system, there's nothing, like, you're not doing anything about it. I said, like, even when we had the point system in place, we had like 15 kids a week doing detention. That means the kids were still with the point system, not wearing hats and jackets, talking, you know, doing all the things you don't want them to do during davening, walking outside by davening, talking in the hallways. So, yeah, we were having detentions. We had to administrate the detentions. We had to call the parents, tell them to come late and fight with them and all that. And what did we get out of it? When we took it away, the same kids were doing the same thing anyway. We just didn't give them detention, so it made our jobs easier. Like, it didn't stop the misbehavior. That's the big question.
What about those middle kids?
It didn't stop the misbehavior so much. So that's a good study to do. It didn't stop the behavior. We have to be on top of it, and we have to speak up. We can't, like, ignore it. It has to be something that has to be addressed. But there are other things to be addressed. You know, let's say a teacher would come into a 10th grade class and say, like, I remember as an 8th grader, we had 4 science teachers that were fired in the middle of the year. It was awesome. And the 5th one came in and said, I know I'm your 5th teacher coming to teach science this year. And it's now, whatever it was, January or February. I will be here on the last day of the year, June. I will be here on the last day. I'm not quitting. I will be here on the last day. And if you're going to work with me, we're going to have a great year. I have a lot of experiments. I have a lot of great things to teach you and to do with you. But if you're gonna misbehave and you're not gonna allow the class to learn, then you're not gonna be able to stay in my class. That's all he said. And then he just took out blue star reading, and not one kid misbehaved. He prepared classes, he really taught, and no one gave him a hard time. So it's almost like, you know, he just treated us like adults in a certain way. He didn't treat us like kids. He didn't threaten us. He just said that, he said he's not leaving. So we didn't know that the other guys got fired. You know, what we did to those science teachers was pretty bad. But, you know, so that is one of the most important yesodos, that you don't really have to do. I mean, I'll give you another example. We have some, current, former students here that don't give away all the secrets, but I'm going to throw out a four-letter word now, test. So many teachers, Rebbeim, they use a test, not as a way to evaluate the student's learning. The test, that's what it's supposed to be. You're testing for knowledge. You know, really, who are you testing?
Yourself.
You're testing you're supposed to, if they don't know it, it's your problem. You're supposed to be teaching them. So if they don't know it, whose fault is it? It's your fault. So that's your job, is to teach them. So if they don't know it, whose fault is it? the kid's fault, okay, kid could try harder probably, but come up with an exciting methodology. You know, the science teacher figured it out. You know, he came up with an exciting way, he did experiments. We liked experiments, so we learned science. So he figured it out. But if he was just gonna come in with textbooks and tell everyone, take out your pens, mitochondria are energy cells. That, by the way, it's the only thing I remember on my biology region. And every year on the biology region, there's a mitochondria. They ask you what are energy cells called, or they say, what are mitochondria? That's the only thing I remember from my biology. So if you just go through like really this monotonous thing, then yeah, then it's going to be boring. But whose fault is it? But anyway, aside from the fact that the many teachers, instructors, they lose sight of who they're testing, but they don't even use the test to evaluate. They're evaluating the kids, okay? But they're not even using it to evaluate. They're using it as a control to get the kids to learn. Oh, I'm giving a test, and you are going to get a report card. You will fail, and therefore I can force you to learn because I'm giving you a test. There's the worst reason for a kid to learn is because there's a test. And what about the kid who can't handle the anxiety or the stress from a test? If a kid can't handle that anxiety and stress, you just gave that kid and some of the kids around him every reason to not learn. He's not going to learn more. Oh, I can't learn this. Oh, and there's going to be a test on it. Not only can I learn it, but I can't even try to learn it because I'm going to get stressed out when I don't know it because I know I'm not going to get up for the test. And when's there going to be a test? And there are kids who go crazy. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't get rid of all tests, but we also have to have a understanding of what the test is. So that's the job of the, you know, I remember great Meister, I was the division head in Kibbutz Mogen Av, Shlita, Zichrono Livracha, and they were going on a trip, a canoe trip, and only the kids who passed the deep water test were able to go on the trip. And I was, first of all, I can't swim, so I couldn't go on the canoe trip. I didn't pass the deep water test. I didn't take the deep water test. I didn't want to go on a canoe, deep water, anything. So I was the division head, and I was left with 29 boys out of 80 who were not able to go on the canoe trip. So you could just imagine. So what am I supposed to do with 29 kids? The only other trips that Mogen Av used to do, this is in like the early 80s, is they went on hikes. Every week there was a hike day. But not like a hike where you're going like up mountains and down mountains and in some national park. But you just walked to like the next town on the road. You walked to Kanyanga Lake. You know, you walked like 10 miles to a post office and found a soda machine, which the camp did not have. And you were able to get a soda if you had exact change and walk back. So these 29 kids were like, you know, the one, like the losers. They're like the losers who are stuck in camp with me. So I went to the director of the camp, Rabbi Kamenetsky, and Zichrono Livracha. And I went to him, I said, I'd like to speak to you. I said, you know, the head counselor said, you know, go speak to the director. So he goes, what do you have in mind? Like, I hear, like he said, the 29 kids, what do you have in mind? Says, we should get a bus and I'll take them bowling. Bowling and pizza, do the trick. So he said, it's not in our budget, can't do that. So I said to him, what am I supposed to do with these kids? So I said to him, what am I supposed to do with these kids? And you know what he said to me? Oh, you say play basketball. No, he said better, more sharper. He looked at me, he says, that's what we hired you for. We hired you to figure out what to do with them. That's your job. You figure it out. So yeah, a lot of things you could do. I could have made a scavenger hunt and make something real exciting and capture the flag. I don't know what I ended up doing, but you know, whose responsibility was it? It was my responsibility. I was coming and saying, this is boring, stupid. The kids aren't going to be happy. So I'm going to go to the kids and tell them the camp is too cheap. I could have done that. The camp is too cheap to do anything with you, so we're just going to be here and like do blueberry picking or something like that. You know, I could have done something like that, but that would be throwing the camp under the bus. And my job was to make the kids very excited. So I'd do something that when the other guys came back, the guys were there. They said, "Oh my, you don't know what you missed." So, you know, a lot of times it's your job to make something very, very good. You know.
So you could do it. You could make the MVP without.
Yeah, you could do it without it.
You make every kid feel special.
That's the job. That's your job, to make every kid feel special. A lot of ways you can do it. You can call the kid up at night, call kids up at night, saying how are things doing. I know it's so hard to talk during the day. You can do a couple of things. Send them a card on his birthday.
During the year.
Yeah, all year. You can do it every week if you really want to make sure it happens. I give you 50. Give you a list of 50 things.
For a bat, right?
You could do.
It's for a bat.
For anyone.
If you want,
you come to my office. I'll give you a list. I have it on paper.
Wait, counselors should send 50 kids birthday cards?
Oh no!
I'm not talking about
here. Counselors. It's easier for counselors in camp. In camp, it's easy. But in camp, because camp, you don't have to get a academic behavior. You just have them. You just want to make sure the kids are basically functioning. So the kids have to feel that you care about them. So, you know, also they want to feel like they're like we treated special. We did this the first year,
mm-hmm.
year one. We did a few counseling visits. Unless he was freaking out that he was going to be a counselor.
I was not freaking out. That's not true.
And it was, right? Remember the first year? We had two vadim on.
Yeah, I used a lot of the things we did.
Do you have a story you could tell that worked?
Or
even something that didn't work?
I could give two stories.
Give one that didn't work, even better.
One that worked. I only have good stories.
All right, okay. You're so positive.
Well,
so positive.
One, instead of asking, one time a kid was, it was a good kid. He's just like very, very wild. And I kind of just let him do his own thing because I was, you know, I assumed that's what the camp wanted me to do. And it was good for the kid. One day he comes back in the bunkhouse and I'm worried he's going to make a lot of noise, but I really wanted to go shower and go to sleep. So instead of being like, please make sure you're quiet when you go in, I said, "Oh, Zachy, I'm going to shower now. I really need the bunk to stay quiet. Can I trust you that you'll keep the bunk quiet and you make sure that everyone, you know, like whatever?" And he like looks at me, he's like, "Yeah, for sure," you know. So instead of just being straight up and then making it like almost like a fight, I gave him the trust. I was asking him to give him the trust. That was something I learned from him a lot. And then.
Great job, yeah.
And then Rebbe last year said, Rebbe said, in the class, you ask every kid how he is. I mean, like, how are you every day? And then you get the different answers, and then it shows that they care, and also you could tell when they're down or whatever. So it's very hard to do it to every kid every single day, because you also can't do it, you know, without, if you do it in front of three kids and everyone, it just feels fake. But even just having that mindset of making sure every single kid is accounted for every day and not like falling through the cracks, even if he's less of a whatever, that was another thing that really helped with overall.
You'd be surprised with what Nasi's saying. If you go over to a kid and you ask them, you know, how's it going for you? Are you enjoying camp? Privately, are you enjoying camp? And you don't like, and you wait with him. You don't just say, "Okay, take care." You wait till he answers. You know, how's it going? It's okay, you're not homesick, you know, your bed's okay. You ask them just a couple of questions to show that you're really on it. It's very, very meaningful. You know, there are some people who just score, yeah.
Camp question?
Yeah.
What happens, they tell us like last night that beds in the camp doesn't want them to be awake the last night, even though the minhag olam is that everyone stays awake.
Right.
Like, on the one hand, you kind of want to follow what the camp is telling you, but it's like the kids are going crazy.
Come on, every night?
No, last night.
Oh, last night of camp?
Yeah, it's like a big fight between the campers and the faculty of the camp.
You know, a good mahalach is to see what everyone else is doing. You know, I'll tell you this, Maisa, a very, very esteemed, venerable, distinguished, experienced Manal spoke to a team of Rebbeim and said that when he was a Rebbe, the principal had this loudspeaker system that was piped into every classroom. So this way, he doesn't have to send a memo around to each class in the old days, and there are no emails. So he would just like turn on the microphone, and he would telecom his message into every classroom. So when you heard, like, I remember when I was a kid, you know, you hear like three taps, it meant the principal had to say, "Hello everyone, there's going to be an assembly today," or something like that, things like that. And this Manal, who was giving this session to the Rebbeim, said that every time he went on the air, it disturbed my class. They were all like freaking out, and I couldn't get them back afterwards. They were undisciplined. And he one Sunday afternoon, he climbed up into the ceiling panels, and he came with the scissors, and he cut the wires. He told me he cut the wires, and after that, he wasn't disturbed anymore. Now, I'm not saying I advise that. That sounds like a bad thing, but you know, sometimes you have to know what they mean. You know, you have to know what they mean. So maybe ask some of the experienced counselors, what do you do? Unless you're the experienced counselor, but if you're not the experienced counselor, you know, see what the more experienced counselors doing, the people who they're relying on. I'll take a question in a second, and see what they're doing. So you don't want to be that counselor, to be the only one who's, you know, not letting the kids, you know, the kids, you can be there with, 11 o'clock at night, the last night of class. I said lights out, and everyone's going outside for a barbecue. So, you know, that's very hard when the administration and the staff are not on the same page. Usually, they're tighter together. They're really not on the same page. It could be a problem. So maybe someone could help bring it together. Like, you know, Rabbi Gita, that's not going to happen with Rabbi Gita. You know, he's not going to be thinking they're sleeping when they're not sleeping. You know, so you have someone who's really very, unless they're not around, they just say you should do it. Then, okay, they don't realize, you know. You don't want to be undermining of their wishes, but that's why it's always good not to be the most experienced person there. It's someone else to blame it on. They say, "Oh yeah, I know you said that, but it sounded like he doesn't, you know, he understood that you didn't really mean that." Yeah.
Let's say you have, especially like in camp, especially I feel like it usually happens more with staff kids. The kids are like, "You can't make me do what you want." Like curfew. "Well, you know, I need to go to the canteen first, whatever. Shachris, you want me to get up?" You know, like, you know who my father is? He's the learning rabbi. like, what do you do with those kids who specifically don't want to listen to anything you have to say?
Yeah. But, you know, it's definitely it's a challenge. So what I'm about to say is not, I don't want to oversimplify it by saying, "Oh, you just do this and go easy." Sometimes it's hard work. But I heard this mindset from Rabbi Foreman. You know, I wrote about it. And his children emailed me that they heard the story from him also, so I know that it's true. So he was teaching a fourth grade class, and it was the first day of snow, New York winter, and it was the first day of snow. What do you think the kids wanted to do? They just wanted to, you know, standing out the window and watch the snow. They didn't want to sit 9 o'clock in the morning and start learning. So he came into the class and he said, you know, that they thought they were ready for him to, like, say, "Get into your seats or else call the principal." He said, "It's the first day of snow, first day of winter, and just you should know, the first 10 minutes of today's lesson, we're all going to be going to the window to watch the snow. And I'm setting the clock for 10 minutes. And after 10 minutes, then we'll start learning. But today we're going to have 10 minutes to watch the snow." And he went to he set the thing and put some music on, and the kids watched the snow. And after 10 minutes, they simply went back to their seats and opened their books and started learning. So he respected their need to go do that. So I don't want to oversimplify because you mentioned a few different scenarios there with going to sleep and with chakras. They each have multiple yetzaharas there to not want to do what they want to do, but you know, sometimes to get them to want to do it takes a little planning. I remember when I was eighth grade Rebbe, so
there seems to be a thing like even if they don't necessarily want to go to the canteen, but the camp said no, and you think you could tell me what to do? Like,
I give them
permission, you know, but I don't know.
And it's your responsibility to supervise them to not go?
Well, when it's curfew, yes.
So are you able to go for them? See, it's a little bit chinuch.
Yes, technically, but it would be the greatest idea.
Why?
First of all, they have to go to sleep. You can keep the bunk up. I can come back with food for them. Everyone else is going to watch. They're all going to wake up.
Yeah, you have to come into the summer prepared, planned, shtick. You know, a lot of rebbeim I know who sometimes the schools can't fund them. They use miser money to buy prizes and stuff like that. But you have to come up with a shtick. I was telling you before, I was an eighth grade Rebbe, so I wanted to make a, okay, there was no internet back then. It was 1997, there was no internet. So the big issue was like trying to get the kids that they shouldn't spend so much time watching TV. Now I think we'd buy them the TV if they would give up their internet. So it's amazing how times have changed. But we had a 30-day TV blackout, an exchange. We took them on a 5-day trip to Atlanta, Georgia. I had a devious plan because I wanted to recruit eighth graders to come to us from Atlanta. That was my plan. So I wanted to recruit, but how could I recruit? I'm a Rebbe and an assistant principal, and so I came up with Atlanta and get the kids come, show them the kids, and they'll want to come. So I had to get to Atlanta. I had to take the kids with me. How do I get the kids with me? I can't just get SM come. So I told them we're gonna have a 30-day TV camp. If everyone in the class doesn't watch TV for 30 days, we're gonna go on a 5-day trip to Atlanta, Georgia. These guys were dancing on the clouds. They were dancing on the clouds. And not only that, I was so naive or inexperienced. I wasn't naive, I was inexperienced. And I included the midwinter vacation in the 30 days. They did not watch TV during midwinter vacation. It was from Sunday to following Monday.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. They didn't. The whole class did not watch TV for 30 days. That's the famous story where, so we went to Atlanta, we went to the school, Rabbi Rosenbaum, Kama Rosenbaum, and met with us, and some balabas came to me and shul, are you Rabbi Palgon from Miami? I said, yeah. Says, my daughter came home and said that Abba, these 25 boys came here from Miami, they didn't watch TV for a month, and all they got was a trip here. No, the Atlanta kids don't think anything better about Atlanta, but so they would do anything. So if you create the right ruach, the kids will do anything. Anything. Well, what's the prize? Now, it doesn't probably sound to be so big. I did a big prize because I wanted to go to Atlanta. So I was selling what I wanted them to want. It was a brilliant plan because that's what happened. We went to Atlanta, and I remember we made the biggest Kiddush Hashem because two girls wanted to talk to two of the boys Shabbos after davening, and the two boys told them, I'm sorry, we don't talk to girls. That was the biggest Kiddush Hashem, especially because it happened from the two boys who do talk to girls. But no, they knew. They came with their hats, and we were prepared. They were wearing their hats, and the city in Atlanta, they were so impressed with the yeshiva. Like they never saw anything like it. that the community got together and they started their own high school. The next year. It happened twice. I did this twice. It happened in Atlanta and in Cleveland. Cleveland, the same thing happened in Cleveland. We bought we bought 10 dorm guys to Cleveland. I went with them, and we had a big open house, and like 25 parents came. The kids spoke at this parlor meeting. Their parents were blown away, and they ended up, Chavetz Chaim Yeshiva in Miami is amazing, and they ended up opening up a Chavetz Chaim in Cleveland. That's what happened. We were the impetus to start the yeshiva led this. I stopped recruiting. That's really what happened both times. So I'm saying if you make a plan, you come in with a plan, and you say, guys, I have a great plan. We're going on a 10-mile hike that I'm planning. I'm going to sleep out, and here's what I need from you. I'm going to work on that plan. I need a couple of guys to help me. If you're, who know about hiking, and you teach them how to make knots, and you get all the kids into different things. And what I need from you is there's going to be 5 canteen nights that we're going to go. But on the non-canteen nights, the camp's looking to said they'll help me. If we have a bunk that's going to really cooperate, I don't want to wrap everything into one thing, but I don't want to oversimplify it. But if you get the right prize and they buy into the fact that you really mean it. I have a friend who said that sincerity is the most important thing. And if you can fake that, you got it made. So I won't tell you which branch he's a Rosh Yeshiva of, but he is. It was a joke. He told me it wasn't his word. It was from his father. He didn't want to take credit. I'm saying, Peshay Walmer. No, but I really mean, you have to really be sincere about it. If they really think you mean that, that you're there for them, and you're respecting them, and you're gonna, the biggest prize they ever got was that you're their counselor, and you're going to take care of them, and you're doing this trip, and if they do it with you, you're going to go all out, and you're going to, get them doubles and francs, on the thing. That would be mamish fantastic. Can you see if there's soda in that fridge? I thought there was. The ones with the yellow caps. No, the next one, yeah. There's stuff in there. I remember. And I put some stuff in freezers somewhere. I don't know which freezer.
Ray was assistant principal first year.
I was assistant for 4 years.
That meaning the first year of Chinuch?
Huh?
I'd already prepared for assistant principal.
It just shows you that they're maybe it's in the other. Maybe there's a. There are. Oh, so yeah, everyone, we are.
So, at the end of the day, Rebbe doesn't think, especially for a camp, that they should have MVP, the best. I don't know really what to be. I assume it's the best sports player. And also,
I know they give out learning awards, and we're gonna give out learning awards at the end of the summer. But they only invited the kids who got the awards to come to the ceremony.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can relate to that because they want them to be mechabed them extra.
That's not bad.
And
I never got an award.
Yeah, I never got an award either. So, that's the part I don't see any value. I think you get much more out of, you get much more out of doing it the other way. I'm going to treat all of them MVP. And it seems to me like you're gonna end up with one kid who's doing good. Who do you think is going to be the MVP? Certain kids are going to be 5+ on every category every week, every day. They're going to daven and they're going to learn, and they just Hashem made them born that way. But most kids are not like that.
100% time in a fair assessment, which is only based on everyone else.
Yeah.
Does everything going to create the same issue? Even if you don't name the valedictorian, but you're still asking guys to speak over other people.
Well,
everyone's graduation.
Nobody wants to speak.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm saying, does everything else still, people might feel jealous?
Yeah, okay, let's say, you're right.
Right, I think
no one should speak
It's like a big need that so much space and graduation.
Yeah, you know. We sort of I thought they changed that. That's why they told, okay, all the boys know that not everyone can speak at graduation. It would be end of the episode. So that's why we made the senior Shabbos to give more recognition to the boys. So that, and we tell the boys, I begin to push for this. Anyone that wants to speak on the whole Shabbos, anyone that wants to speak can speak. We encourage everyone to speak. They want everyone to speak. Huh? No.
He made everyone.
No, I could tell you your year that
he called the people who didn't ask.
I know, but I know there are those that didn't speak. Tell me privately. I know he intimidated you to speak. You mean? By telling you that everyone's speaking, so you're the only one not speaking. Yeah, that was his line to everyone.
He just called him up. The entire time, and he called him up.
USB flash drive.
He called him up. I'm prepared.
I still remember the speech.
Were you prepared?
No.
I still remember it.
So what'd you say?
You
get that word flash drive and Yeshiva just bring
flash drive. They plug us in ninth grade.
That's
like
what he said.
Until right now, I thought he...
That was not me. I did not. I would not do that. I would call you up without asking you to speak.
Exactly. He did to me, so I did it to everyone.
What?
I thought he called every single person.
When?
It was the part.
You were there, Shabbos. You saw
it. It was the proudest moment of my life.
There wasn't 42 speakers.
It felt like 42 speakers. Everyone spoke.
Many did speak, but I don't think everyone spoke. So they called you up without preparation and you spoke? You're so talented. I wouldn't be able to speak if I didn't prepare to speak.
He spoke about how we were brainwashed.
It was the best
speech. That's
really
what the speech
was.
That we're flash drives and Yeshiva just programs us. We're robots.
They plug us in ninth grade and take us out fully loaded, you know, and hand it back to the parents.
He probably knew that you deep down wanted to speak.
Really deep down.
I vaguely remember you did a very good job. So
that was all improv. It's even better.
But that's the hardest acting.
The first thing that came to your mind.
The hardest acting is improv. Improv. It's,
yeah.
It's the hardest.
But the first thing that came to his mind was the USB thing. So that means, you know, that was on the forefront of.
Yeah. Question.
What is the purpose of getting guys to speak? Is it for themselves or for, like, your parents?
No, I don't think there's a mitzvah for a person to speak.
No, I'm saying, like, why does the yeshiva encourage?
No, it happens to be that, this is what I think, is that it happens to be that it's very hard to get up and speak in front of your peers, in front of your parents, in front of your bayim and teachers. It's very hard to do that, so a person needs a lot of coaxing to be able to do that. So I don't think they're trying to get you to twist someone's arm who doesn't want to speak, to trick them into speaking. I don't think that's
also, people don't want to say that, like, I wanted to speak.
It sounds
a little bit like
I think the whole purpose was simply to encourage the person to get past his natural. But, you know, it's an opportunity to get up and say thank you and to express. Most people, like, feel, okay, I'm so glad I was able to get up and thank everyone and do that. What do? You get up and say this, and when a person's graduating, they look around, they see all their BAME and teachers and principals, and they said, thank you for helping me get to this point. That's the only thing you could say is that, different ways of saying that. Usually, in most cases, except for Avram, in most cases, the person wants to say it, just needs a little coaxing. But there's one person who really didn't want to say it.
No, he really didn't want to. It's fine.
So that's our answer.
Didn't want the sweatshirt, didn't want to speak.
But
I remember everything.
Every teacher, Rebbe, their job is to inspire their students to inspire their students to want to do everything, to not go to the canteen and to go to the canteen and do anything. So we did good? We answered your question?
Yeah.
So are you going to do it, MVP?
No.
But you can't replace it with nothing. You have to replace it with, in your mind, with that everyone's gonna be MVP, and they're gonna feel it.
Well, yeah.
Right, so that's what you have to feel.
What about in camp leagues, specifically an MVP? That invokes like a spirit of competition and seriousness to the league, even if
not
it does
a championship.
Well, let's say an MVP specifically. I mean, you also a championship. Obviously, you need a championship because you need a. But even just having an MVP award, is that the same?
This guy
it's hard to replace that with.
There's always that guy that gets the. There's always four guys that get the get MVP. It's four guys that get MVP every single year. Either one of those four.
Still.
If you get 8 years of camp, both four of those four guys got it twice.
The top 5% is competitive anyway.
You know, there's a whole debate in the yeshiva world. There's a whole debate of how competitive should be the, the league sports. I remember there was a parent who was hocking Rabbi Grossman. They wanted to have competitive sports in elementary school, and Rabbi Grossman really didn't want to do it. He felt that the kids were too little. And, you know, the cutest thing is to watch one of these little league games, and you have these, 11-year-olds playing baseball, and then the kid, it's the bottom of the ninth, base is loaded, and he strikes out, and the kid goes back to the dugout and starts crying. That's the most beautiful sight. that's really what an adult feels like also, but he's mature enough to not cry, but he feels like crying. But a little kid can't keep it in, so he cries. So we have to realize that's really what's going on. So the younger the kid, they can't keep it in. There's going to be high emotion, and, it's good training, but if they over, stimulate the kids with big awards and trophies and MVPs, the kids are too young. It's unnecessary. So like we agreed to play in a league, right, Becker? It was a whole big hack, I remember, and we spoke to Ragram Latterman. It was a whole hack. We the shura we made is that they could participate in a league, but there can't be standings. So we play again. We keep our own record, but the league that we play in. We play, and there's no standings.
So
there's
no championship. There's
no standing. There's no championship.
There
championship? There's no. No, I'm not talking about. I'm not talking about team D against team E. Whatever. Becker against.
You're saying people.
When we play against all these Goyish teams, and we play against YHS and against TTB, and there's no standing. It's just. We get a bunch of schools to play each other, and there's no standings. We're, our guys keep saying how we're doing this year, but there's no standings.
It was a tournament.
That's funny. So. So we try to downplay the competition a little bit because then it becomes too much, too stimulating. We try and keep it more powerful. Huh?
What's the problem?
Too much competition causes,
high
emotion, fights, bad midos come out. And you see sometimes in the news, you see like these parents come to the end, their parents get into fights with each other. And I went to Rabbi Mann. He started a football league and a baseball league for Torah Semes kids. It's amazing. I went when my Blinder kids were playing, and I went. And they don't even keep scoring the game. I think that's I would keep scoring the game, but they don't even keep scoring the game. The kids couldn't care less. They just want to kick the ball, and having such a great time. It's very. In that way, it's like age appropriate, keep it simple.
Would it be better, to never introduce scorekeeping to kids?
But they know.
It's not the same.
There is some utopia out there. But the kids in second grade, they go to a Met game. Macham Miami takes the kids to a Marlins game, I think. They go one game in the summer. So until it comes Trafe, but it's still allowed. I remember Rabbi Grimblatt, when I came here, Rabbi Grimblatt took everyone, the whole school went to a Panther game. Every was one Panther game a year, the yeshiva got tickets, and what tickets, and the Grimblatt went, I went with him, and we supervised, we went to a Panther game. And we went for a few years until they introduced, they used to have this guy that used to shoot the t-shirts. So it used to be a guy shooting the thing into the thing. And then they turned it into, and whichever section cheered the loudest is the one where he shot the thing. That made a lot of sense. It was very exciting. I went. Then they changed it to a girl shooting the thing, and the noise you were making was a whole different type of noise. Whoever cheered for this girl the most got the thing. So we couldn't go. We stopped going to games. In 1 year, we had actually put a deposit down to go. And Dr. Jacob, who had season tickets back then, told me he doesn't think he can take the yeshiva boys anymore. So we asked him. He said, "Yeah, we can't take them." So
I mean, you don't know.
Yeah, that's like going to a movie and closing your eyes. you can't do that with kids. So. So we tried getting our deposit back, and they wouldn't give us our deposit back. And we told them the reason why we're not going, because we can't take the boys there. It's against our religion. They wouldn't give us our deposit back. So I cursed the Panthers that they shouldn't win, and therefore they don't win. The joke with the Chassidish Rebbe? He goes, he's trying to make a train, and he's running to catch the train, and right as he gets to the door of the train closes and pulls away, and the Rebbe curses the train that should crash. So all his Hasidim were there. Rebbe, there's Yidden on the train. There's Yidden on the train. Oy, oy, oy. So he gives a bracha, the train shouldn't crash. V'kach have, the train didn't crash. Okay. Okay, guys.
It's a very good parable.